Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. Little bit different, episode 7, season 8. Normally I'd say on my left I've got Jack and on my right I've got Ryan Champion, but if you want to hear what it's like for a 42-year-old man on Christmas morning, metaphorically speaking, you're now listening to him. I'm currently with the guys down in London. I'm at the Dirt 4 launch, the press launch, which is really, really exciting. And I'm looking around lots of screens, lots of people playing the game, lots of people learning about the game. I've got Paul Coleman alongside me. Of course, Paul's no stranger to the podcast. Hello, Paul.
Hi, how you doing?
Excited. Excited doesn't even cover it. And I'm sure you're feeling a little bit of a buzz as well. This is all proper now, isn't it? Again.
Yeah, well, this is the culmination of all that hard work that we've been going through for the last, basically 2 years to get to this point. There was an overlap with Dirt Rally for Dirt 4, but to finally get it in the press's hands, to get the game out there and start showing it to people is really important. Game's going to be launched pretty soon now, so what you see here is basically what's going to come on the disc. So, can't wait to get your hands on it and show people what it's all about.
Paul, you've tried to put certain elements of rallying in that people probably wouldn't even think about, and one that just brings to mind there is that unfortunately I've just crashed into a Marshall's car going through the final control. You've still got to guide the car once you've gone through the final, you know, that it's through the red board, you've still got to guide it down to get your time for the Marshall and things like that. Was that conscious to do things like that? Did you want to give it more of a rally feel?
Absolutely. If you've experienced going rallying firsthand, one of the nicest things is going over that flying finish and kind of getting that kind of moment to reflect on the stage that you've just taken part in, and previously all our games had just kind of stopped you when you crossed the flying finish and that was it. You went straight into the replay, but for me it was really important to capture that sense of wind down, as it really kind of helps you take stock of what you've just done before you then get your result from the marshal. So it's just little touches like that that we've introduced into the experience that have really helped bring the atmosphere of going rallying into the whole experience.
Can I ask where the inspiration came from? Obviously, I've just very fortunately or unfortunately took the classic Richard Burns 205 round a Welsh stage, which we're going to talk about in a second. The inspiration for the cars, was that from the fans? Was that from yourself? Obviously, you're a massive rally fan. Where did that come from?
A little bit of both, actually. I think the 205 is quite a popular, starter car for a lot of people, certainly in UK rallying. It's an iconic hot hatch, so we know that it resonates with the wider European audience, and obviously the heritage that this particular 205 has, with it being used by Richard Burns, kind of meant that it was that perfect fit for an entry-level historic car, for players to get to grips with our stages, but also having all of that heritage and history behind it. So, yeah, I mean, cars like that have their place in the game for all of those many reasons. There are some that are put in because of business decisions. There are some that are put in because our fans ask for them. It very much depends on the circumstances. But what it means is that our list should appeal to more and more people, which is exactly the whole premise behind this game, to try and get more people interested in the experience.
Fantastic. Now, I've just drove a stage in Wales. Now, it's not a stage in Wales, it's one that we generated, which is something you were really, really excited about the last time you were on the programme, and quite rightly so. Just tell us a little bit about what's happened, because I felt like I recognised the stage. That's why I was asking you about it. Just tell us perhaps where the inspiration came from.
So it is set in a Welsh landscape. The geography that you're driving through is near Hafren in Wales. But the road that you're driving on, the stage, the actual track that you are running the car on, has been generated using our procedural technology, and that is what we feel is the game changer. That's the thing that makes the difference with this game. All of our previous rally games, and I would argue that pretty much every rally game that's ever gone before this, you've been able to learn the stage, you've been able to essentially turn it into a time trial game, and listening to the co-driver became less and less important. With your stage, and the fact that every stage is different, so it's being procedurally generated, and there's a near infinite combination of these stages, you now have to listen to, in this circumstance, Nicky Griss, to actually know what the stage is doing next and what you need to be doing to set the car up for that next sequence of corners. that's what rallying is all about, and that's what we've tried to capture here. So no longer are the days of being able to memorize that very specific Sweet Lamb stage or that very specific stage in, on the Monte Carlo rally. This is all about, you know, working as a team with your co-driver, adapting to the conditions, and then plowing ahead. And the stage that you've just driven here is in, you know, fog patches. It's not the thick fog that it can go to, but you can't see the next sequence of corners that are kind of unfolding ahead of you. You have to listen to what that co-driver is telling you. And, you know, it really is what it's all about. So that's what we've tried to capture.
Fantastic. Well, as I say, that was my stage in Wales. Obviously, you've got four other countries, and same principle, I'm guessing. You know, you've got Australia in there, that you've took the general Australian landscape and tried to adapt exactly the same principle.
Yeah, exactly. In Australia, it's all farmland and forest. In Michigan, mostly forest, but there's some open areas as well. With Spain, it's actually twisting sort of mountain roads that cut in and out of towns. So I think we should definitely have a look at that soon. And then Sweden, again, it's based in the same area that we had Sweden in Dirt Rally, but obviously every stage is different, carving in and out of the forest.
So I went, I did a bit of a cop-out, Paul. I went to Lydon. Obviously, I've got a little bit of background with Lydon, having presented British Rallycross back in the day, so I kind of had a good idea of what the circuit, where it goes anyway. But certainly, the cars feel very, very planted. And I've just said to you, I struggled with the controller on the original Dirt game. On this, the actual, for me, the rallycross element of it certainly feels so much easier with using the pad.
Yeah, well, I mean, it actually all starts from the foundation of the tyre model, which we've made huge improvements with. We work quite closely with Cooper Tyres, got as much data as they were able to give us, and then developed that out using Petter Solberg and Oliver Solberg to really refine the feeling of the car. And make sure that the setup was in tune with how these rallycross cars are set up, and, you know, with the addition of the stability provided by the gamer handling as well, you should find it a lot easier. That coupled with the fact that you know Lydon, the track's a little bit wider, and you can just practice every corner entry four times over the course of a race. The real differential between this and the rally side of the game is the rally courses. You are seeing that corner for the first time. Every time, whereas with rallycross, you know, you really can dial in your lap a lot better. But yeah, I'm pleased that you find it a lot more stable, because rallycross was perhaps more unstable than it should have been. These cars are not set up to be loose; they're set up to drive fast and be very progressive, and that's what the drivers want from them, and that's how we've set these cars up. So I'm glad that you got that feeling.
Fantastic, Paul. You're probably going to have to kick me out the building, because I'll be here for hours now after this. But folks, we're going to crash back over to the other two, and we're going to do the news and headlines and everything else from Rally Portugal. But Paul Coleman, we'll get you back on the programme soon. But thank you for inviting us down to this fantastic launch.
As always, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for coming down. It's been a long way to come down here, so I hope it was worthwhile.
Absolutely.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents, or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Strange way round we've done the show. Obviously, I've just come from the dirt for launch, where you've heard me talking about it, and you've heard me talking about the boys and what they're going to think about it. I've just gave Ryan the good news that it's also playable on a hand control if he wants it to be, but he doesn't really care. So for this week only, for the second part of the show, I'll say on my right, I have Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, and I'm saying I don't really care, because I've now got my steering wheel and pedal set up, so, you know, I'll play it on that.
Okay, well, that's fair, but you can just jump on it and you know, have a quick blast, as it were.
It's not the same. You've got to have the steering wheel and pedals now, haven't you?
Well,
once you've changed, you know, once you've made that move, it's difficult to go back.
Okay, fair dues. Well, I was trying to be helpful, giving you a little bit of information, but it was a mega time anyway. And Jack Benyon, who hasn't got steering wheels and pedals. Hello, Jack Benyon, on my left.
Or a PlayStation.
Yeah, if anyone's got a PlayStation, PlayStation 4 for Jack Benyon. Can, do you think we can do some kind of like crowdfunding?
Just a PlayStation 2.
Yeah, a PlayStation 1.
I've got one of those. I've got a PlayStation 2 with V Rally on it and all Colin McRae games and stuff. So, yeah. Hi, hello, everyone at Absolute Rally and Ryan and Tony. Hello.
Hello. You sounded like you were just joining us for the first time then, right? What was
that? Well, I was, because you had a whole conversation after introducing me and not giving me a chance to say hello. So I thought I'd better just slot that in there.
Do you know what? We had an email from somebody that you encountered last weekend making reference to your obstinance, Jack Benyon.
Me?
Yeah, you. Do you want me to read out?
Yeah, you can do it. Yeah,
that's right. We should start doing this more, by the way. I realise now we're going slightly...
I think I can guess who this is from.
This is from... where are we? Is it David Thompson?
Yep.
Yes, David Thompson. Tony, just a short note to how much better the sound quality was on last week's podcast. Have you upgraded the equipment? Thoroughly enjoying listening to the podcast each week and enjoy the banter you have with Jack and Ryan. Keep it up. P.S.
Yeah,
P.S.
Oh,
there's a P.S. Jack, come on, sit down.
Sorry.
P.S. Met the infamous Jack Benyon at the stop line of Mount Joe, stage 1 and 2 of the Scottish Rally. Hair was suffering under a hood as it was tipping down with rain. What a fantastic guy. Oh, my God.
Dear.
David, Deputy Stage C, the guy with the pink tabard. There you go. I can't believe you got fan mail to our programme.
That's brilliant. I can't believe I was walking up the to the stop line, and from about 200 metres David recognised me. So it was lovely to meet him, and it was nice to speak to someone who listens to Absolute Rally and listen to their thoughts about sort of what we do and how we do it. So yeah, it was lovely to bump into David. Thanks for looking after us.
That sounds ominous. Feedback.
No, it was mainly about the sound quality, and I asked him to pass that on, which he's done. So thanks very much for that, David. We really appreciate it. And anyone else who's listening to Absolute Rally who's got feedback, feel free to send it in.
Yeah, because I'm the one who deals with it. Now, for the sake of argument here, feedback is always appreciated, but sound quality is always at the mercy of Wi-Fi. So when Jack Benyon sat next to an orchestra playing in a park, it's always going to be tricky to engineer. Ryan Champion is very consistent until, of course, his laptop decides to fire up the fan system on it, and we have to deal with that all the way through a podcast and try and edit it out. Just saying. There you go. Anyway, boys, what a busy old weekend we had. I think we'll start with Portugal. Jack Benyon, as ever, your publication. We're not going to go front page. We're going to talk about front page a little bit later on. But the master returns to form, of course, Sebastien Ogier returning to winning ways on Rally Portugal.
He definitely picked up his form, didn't he? And it's great to see him back on form. He's one of those drivers who can get a little upset about things, as we've seen in the previous couple of rounds. And I did hear him joking at the end of the event that he's got a new car and he hopes Malcolm's going to give him a new car for every single event after he won Monte Carlo in a brand new car and he's won this event in a brand new car. So I don't think Malcolm will be giving him a new car for every event. Something tells him that's probably not going to happen. But it was a real sensible drive from him, wasn't it? Did a good job cleaning the road on the first day and then really pulled away on the next 2 days after Tanak's problem. So yeah, good drive, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? It's funny enough. I think he tweeted, Matthew Wilson tweeted soon after. Don't think we can quite manage the new car every event. But right, is it what we were expecting from Seb? We knew we was getting a new car beforehand. Can there be that much difference? Is it psychological? Is the I don't know. You know this stuff better than us. That's why you're on Absolute Rally. Tell us.
Well, let's not forget Thierry Neuville had a brand new car as well. So, I don't put it down to the new car. I think we just saw Sebastien Ogier driving a car that he was very comfortable in. He made the best of minimised his losses early on the rally when his road position wasn't favourable. And then as he got a better road position, it was just Sebastien Ogier at his best again. A very, very professional drive. And we referred to it on other rallies when he wasn't comfortable with the car, he was still grinding out the results, and we said it's ominous for the day that that the car is working as he wants. And like we've talked about, it's never been fundamental problems. It just seems to have been a setup issue that he hasn't really been able to get quite comfortable in the car. Well, clearly in Portugal that changed. He's now very comfortable with the car, very professional drive, and difficult to see him being beaten for the championship.
You see, I'm going to go the other way, and I know this was Jack's big prediction at the beginning of the year. I just fancy Thierry again, Jack. I don't mean physically. Well, actually, he's quite a handsome bloke, but I just fancy Thierry is going to pip him for this championship, and I don't know why. I really, really don't know why.
I think it's difficult to, you know, in a sense, it's the next rally is going to tell us more about Ogier, I think, because, you know, I accept what you said, Rye, that Nervo's got a new car, but we don't know if there was something wrong with the chassis or if there was a certain problem with Ogier's previous car that hadn't been picked up by the guys at M Sport, and that new car has now rectified that, or whether this is a proper turnaround from Ogier, and whether, you know, he's found a setup that works for him, and this means he's going to be dominant for the rest of the season, for example. So I think the next rally is really going to tell us where Sebastian Ogier is actually at in terms of whether he can really push on now and keep winning rallies. But yeah, you know, Nervo's form at the start of the season has been very impressive, and I don't know what you two felt, you know, his performance was like over the weekend in terms of in comparison to Ogier, and whether that means anything for the rest of the championship. But I still think that the Hyundai is the car to beat, and we saw Citroën struggling again, didn't we? So, you know, for me, Nerville's still got to be the favourite, but I'm very interested to see Ogier sort of and how he turns that around. And when I say Nerville's a favourite, I mean for rally wins, because I still think Ogier's the favourite for the championship.
And now, hang on a minute, I'm sure you said at the beginning of the season, Jack, I'm sure you tipped Thierry Neuville.
I did, but I was wrong, as I am with many of my predictions.
No, hang on a minute. You can't do this on the prediction. Now, actually, speaking of predictions, of course, a bit later on in the programme, my prediction won the Scottish rally last week. So I'm all right. My inbuilt predictor is working really, really well. Now, you said very, very early doors, right? Didn't he predict Thierry Neuville for the championship?
I did. I'm not saying I didn't. I did predict him at the start of the year, but as I said, I quite often get my tips wrong. And at this point, Ogier's quite a fair way ahead in the championship, so you'd be stupid to say that he's not the favourite for the championship for the rest of the year, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, I think the other thing that has changed as well, and Neuville was, you know, was looking incredible, and if Neuville had won the first two rallies, that he would have really capitalised when Ogier was struggling. But now I think Ogier's properly into his stride with the car, so that's why I think it's going to be a tougher task for Thierry to comfortably beat him like he was doing early on in the season.
22 points, boys, difference. 22 points we're talking about. How many rallies are left?
Several.
There you go. That's a cop-out. 22 points we're talking about.
Seven rallies.
Seven rallies left to go. Plus, how many points is it for a win?
25.
Plus five for power stage, yeah. Possibly.
Yeah. So there's 30 points on offer for a rally win if one of your rivals has an issue and doesn't complete the event.
That's a fair point, but you've got to go off what we've seen so far this season, haven't you? You can't go off anything else. So from what we've seen at the start of the season, Thierry Neuville has shown signs of, you know, not being able to deliver rally wins at times, and has appeared a bit shaky. You know, if he corrects that for the rest of the season, then yeah, you know, it's very possible that he could win the championship. But for me, it all depends on Ogier's next rally, and we see exactly what's happened with that M Sport car, because I'm not convinced we got an answer over that weekend as to whether the car had a problem previously and the new one's fixed that, or whether they found a setup which really suits them and that will work for the rest of the season.
I've got to go. I'm gonna go out on a limb a little bit here, right? I'm gonna say it was setup, and the reason why is because the other two, I've done a really good job all year so far.
Yeah, and not only that, these cars are completely stripped and rebuilt every rally. You know, they're effectively a new car every rally. Let's not kid ourselves. You know, so I personally think you're right. You know, I think it was set up as well. But anyway, whatever. The car seems to be working well now, and working well for Ogier. That's the thing. And like you've just said, the other two seem to be comfortable in it from the start. Ogier's made, as we know, a late switch, and it's just taking him time to get comfortable in it. But he certainly looked like a man at home at M Sport at the weekend.
Can I throw something else in there, Tony? Quickly?
Yeah, of course.
I think this is also the first gravel rally we've done where the teams have been able to test in the country that they've been competing in, because previously we've had Mexico and Argentina, which obviously the manufacturer guys haven't been able to test on. So I know a lot of the pre-event testing for some of those events was happening in Spain and Portugal, and now we've had a pre-event test in Portugal, so maybe that helped with Ogier finding that setup. You know, he's got relative experience of the conditions there, so maybe that helped as well.
No, and obviously that ban now, there's a section obviously in the paper this week, isn't it, Jack, with regards to the testing ban now for certain teams, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later on. But I'm going to come to Rye first on this one. Jack just made reference to Citroën. I don't really know what to say. I suppose Andreas has now finally found a home, which we spoke about. I can't believe we've got this far into a podcast not mentioned Andreas Mikkelsen. Andreas has now finally rocked up for Rally Sardinia anyway at the expense of Lefebvre. But Craig Breen, very solid again. Where are we at with Chris? What do you think is going on, Roy?
I mean, bringing in Mikkelsen is obviously good for the team, but Chris has certainly got to up his game very, very quickly, hasn't he? I mean, I don't think this is just about Lefebvre. I think if Chris had been doing maybe the job that was expected, then I'm not sure we'd be seeing Mikkelsen now. They didn't feel they needed him at the start of the year. So what's changed? And what's changed is there's only one of the three drivers delivering the results that were maybe expected. I mean, Craig Breen done a fantastic job again. Very, very solid, consistent fifth place finishes. But, he is setting good times. He's getting the experience and he looks great. And we expected to see more from Chris Meek, didn't we? As simple as that. He's having a difficult time again. He's unfortunately put himself under pressure again, and now he's going to have a very quick teammate. So, it sounds harsh to say it, but he's really going to have to sink or swim in the next few rallies. He is the number one in the team. The team is built around him, the car's built around him, and Andreas Mikkelsen coming in is going to create an interesting dynamic. Is Andreas going to come in and take time to bed in, or is he going to be on the pace straight away? It'll be interesting to see, won't it? But it does up the pressure on Chris Meek.
Do you know what, aside from that though, Ryan, I'll come to Jack and then we can probably discuss a little bit more. Jack, you guys have obviously David Evans has wrote a piece this week with regards to Yves Matton, saying that they want to work with Chris and they want to help him rediscover his form. There's no danger to his seat at the moment. Obviously David's wrote this article. Is that in order to try and maybe help Chris get back to at least a level playing field? Because I think David, by his own admission, when he was doing a roundup of the drivers from the weekend, most miserable man in Portugal, he called Chris.
Maybe it is, yeah. And I think I'm going to do something quite unexpected here, probably, because I can be quite harsh about Chris in the past, but I'm going to side with Chris at this point, because he's not had a car that has been the best in the championship this year, and it's had its reliability issues. You could argue that all the manufacturers have had their reliability issues, but I think Citroën have been there or thereabouts as the worst. I think Chris has not helped that by some of his performances on some of the rallies. I think that's I'm definitely not saying that Chris Meek's been the best driver the championship this year, but what I'm also saying is, imagine how difficult it is for Chris at this stage in his career to have this opportunity. We talked about how Sebastian Loeb had a Citroën built around him, and that was the kind of line when Meek was having this car built, wasn't it, that the car was going to be built for him and this was his big chance to win the world championship. And what's actually happened is they've turned up at the start of the year with a car that wasn't ready to win rallies. They have got there and they have won rallies, but it's still not consistent either in reliability or pace to be a rally winner on every single rally. And think about how difficult mentally that must be for Chris, with all the build-up to the start of this year. And I think it's been really difficult for him. So yes, Chris has not helped himself with some of his performances, and some of his accidents have been a bit questionable, you would probably say. But also, I don't think the car's been there for him either, and I think it's a bit unfair for everyone to jump on Chris's back. I know that's not what you two are doing, but I think some people have been overly harsh about Chris, and I think on this occasion, I think it's probably fair that he doesn't get that much stick, because I don't think he deserves it.
I listen, we're big Chris Meek fans and everything else, but I think the reason why perhaps people have gone down that route, and let's be honest, Chris has been kicked numerous times throughout his career. This is nothing new for him. I think possibly what's kind of created this kind of thing of, hang on a minute, what's going on with Chris? I think it's the fact that this time, more than any other time, that the car's been built. He's been in it from the beginning, and I guess that's what people are kind of slightly confused about, that the fact he's been in the car from the outset. He's got that engineering background, and I think everyone thought they were going to hit the ground running, Jack.
Yeah, that's a fair point as well. The fact that the car's being built around him does also sort of play into his hands as well. He's got to play his role in that, and the car's got to be built around him with his input. So yeah, that's a fair point. But also, I think some of the problems they've had, things like the suspension and stuff, is not really anything Chris could have affected in the lead up to this year. I think that's problems they were always going to find out at the start of the year if they did have them. So, you know, for me, completely accept that Chris has not been on top form and that, you know, his form has been questionable, but he's been pushing a car that isn't really good enough to win rallies on most occasions to try and get the best results he can. And, you know, that hasn't happened on every rally. But, you know, he has been a rally winner, and there's no reason why, with a bit of work, that this team can't bounce back like they did earlier in the season. We saw them at the lowest of lows, and then the next rally they won. So, you know, there's no reason why they can't turn it around. And I think Matt Allen's right to not give up on Chris at this point and work with him to try and, because, you know, we're talking about drivers all the time. You know, we talk about Mikkelsen a lot, and, you know, sorry if I'm going on a bit here, but Sebastian Ogier and Chris Meek to Thierry Neuville, you three drivers who you know can win rallies, aren't they? And then after that, you are searching a little bit. You know, there are drivers there like Andreas who could do it but hasn't had experience of the 2017 car yet. You know, who else do you look for who can actually be a rally winner on a consistent basis? You know, Chris has proved he's got that pace. So for me, Maton and Citroën are right to work with him as they are doing now.
There you go. Ryan Champion, do you agree with our co-host, our friend, our foe, our hair buddy?
Firstly, like you said, you know, I think we're all huge Chris Meek fans and you know, we all want to see him do really well. It is difficult because inherently, knowing what he's like, he will put pressure on himself now. You know, he wants to perform it. You know, I take on board what Jack was saying. You know, they've had issues with the car, but the car's generally been fast. The car has generally been fast enough to win, albeit with with issues. It's still surprising that maybe the car hasn't always been the consistent Citroën that we'd expect. But, you know, at the start of the year, we looked at the Citroën lineup, and in terms of experience, it was the weakest in terms of overall experience of any of the teams, really. But they clearly thought they could do the job with the drivers they had. They've obviously had a little bit of a rethink there, now bringing Andreas Mikkelsen in. I think it's great for the team that there's another frontline driver in there. You know, that will bring on the development of the car. That's more mileage on the car with a proven winner. Absolutely. I think it's right that Citroën and Maton are supporting Chris at this point. I mean, Maton has been the biggest supporter of Chris Meek in his career, really, latterly. There wouldn't be this opportunity without Yves Maton. So, you know, Yves Maton, more than anybody else, wants Chris Meek to succeed at this point. But it does have to start clicking for him. So let's hope they can, get to the bottom of any lingering issues with the car and that Chris can find that confidence. So I don't really think it's about confidence. It's about consistency. Speed's still there, as we saw at the weekend. And it was just a small mistake that unfortunately put him out of the running.
Speaking of small mistakes, and I'm still a little bit, I don't know whether I got a clear response from, and I don't even think Yari Matti, who went very, very well, Jack, on the opening day. I don't know whether you managed to catch the times and the footage on the opening day. Obviously you were very busy, but he was going very, very well, clipped the bank, and then the rest of the weekend seemed to unravel a little bit from there.
Yeah, I saw the roll and tried to keep up as best I could with what was going on over there. And yeah, you know, it was he was there or thereabouts on the first day, wasn't he? But struggling a little bit after that. And I think his illness probably didn't help a little bit later on, as you can read about in MN this week. He was hospitalised on the Saturday night with illness. So difficult to try and judge that one. It's always difficult when a driver's ill, isn't it, to try and benchmark their performance, because you know they're always contending with that sort of their inability to be on the top of their game with the illness. So a difficult one, I think, but you know, considering he was in hospital over Saturday night, I think he did well to get to the end and get some points.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialize in cataloging, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Right, again, you know, as probably aside from the illness and everything else, Yari Matti, I don't know whether you've seen it. I watched the interview at the end of the stage where he was describing he couldn't quite figure out something had changed, something had quite kind of didn't feel quite right, and he just clipped the bank, and that was it.
Like we said, a difficult weekend from the start for him. You know, he was uncomfortable with his back. He had fever. He was on the back foot from the start, and it did unravel for him, really, didn't it? And a difficult weekend for the team as a whole. Hannanen, I think, was his seventh, which is about been the height of Hannanen's season this year. So I think, you know, Toyota will definitely look to regroup and try and come back stronger. I think, having said that, Esa-Pekka Lappi did a great job. I mean, he did, unfortunately, break the suspension and lost 5 minutes with that, but his pace was good. He was generally as quick, if not quicker, than Juho Hannanen, and also, you know, up there with Latvala at some time, scored power stage points as well. So, you know, Lappi, I think, did a great job, and, you know, he'll take some confidence from that, and I think we'll see him, you know, progress through the years. So, difficult weekend for Toyota, but, you know, they're gaining experience all the time. They're gaining mileage with the car, and, you know, I'm sure we'll see Jari Matti come back strong in Italy.
One last thing before we move on to some other bits and pieces is that we still haven't spoke. We always assume, folks, by the way, when you're listening, you kind of know results of rallies, and, you know, you kind of join in the conversation with us almost, as opposed to us reporting what the results are. But you two boys, we've just had another thing that's happened, which we haven't got to yet. The fact that Danny Sordo was third. Again, it's another podium. And again, I'm starting to feel like we kind of missed Danny out, but he's been incredibly consistent this year, Jack.
He has been, yeah. And, you know, I think we've spoke about this at length. I think, you know, I've made my views on Danny very clear. You know, if I'm a team boss, if I want to win rallies, then Danny's not going to be the first name on my list. If I want to score manufacturer points, then, you know, he'd be pretty close. I'd say he'd be in the top three people I'd take in terms of scoring points, because he just proves every season that he's got the consistency, and on both surfaces as well. You know, he may have started his career as a tarmac specialist, but, you know, he has added gravel pace to his repertoire in a way, hasn't he? You know, he's hard to split him and his performances on tarmac and gravel these days, which shows how far he's come as a driver. But yeah, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that he's, you know, he's not good enough to win rallies, and his record shows that. And he wasn't able to beat Sebastian Loeb on a regular basis when he was at Citroën, and has struggled against strong teammates. But what he does guarantee you is points on pretty much every rally. He doesn't do anything stupid and brings the car to the end.
No, absolutely. It's right. Again, it seems odd not to kind of mention that a very consistent performer again with another podium.
Yeah, he went well through the rally. Interestingly enough, I'll come back to him in a while, but Carlos Sainz was obviously on Red Bull TV at the weekend as a guest presenter, and Carlos actually thought it could be Danny's first gravel win. You know, he thought he was driving that well, and that he could actually take the win in Portugal, but he never really looked like doing that. So I think, like Jack says, you know, great consistent performance, didn't look like winning.
There you go. Boys, believe it or not, we're well into things. Couple of things I wanted to mention. I don't even think it's quite in any other business. WRC2, we've got Gus Greensmith joining us right at the end of the podcast this week, so we're going to talk WRC2 with Gus, which Jack will be pleased about, because we're doing the smaller, the lesser categories than just WRC.
Yeah, happy.
Just to put that out. Yeah. And Jack, we've just seen your text message. Awkward. I'm not interested, but thanks all the same. So we're going to be talking about WRC2 with Gus anyway. But yeah, boys, have we got one thing I wanted to mention? Sorry, that's where I was going to go. Quinton Chilbers. I can't quite figure out. Right, I'm going to ask you from a driving point of view. How he managed to land like that?
There was a few cars landing awkwardly, wasn't there? You know, it was as if the jump was a little bit different this year. Maybe the angle of it was slightly different. Gravel roads do change slightly year to year. But I think he was caught in two minds coming up to it. You know, he came up to it and thought he was maybe going a bit quick, and I think he just scrubbed the speed off at the last minute. And if you do slow down at the last minute, it puts more weight onto the front. So once the car goes airborne, it falls on the nose, which is why, you know, the old trick in Finland that that the Finnish drivers used to do was actually brake and then accelerate. So when he took off, the nose was light. So I think it was a bit of indecision that that caused it to land heavily on the nose, and he paid the price, didn't he?
And then some. Jack, have you seen the result of this, or have you seen the footage of this particular jump?
Yeah, there's also a picture in our fan publication this week as well, if you want to take a look at that.
There you go. Right. Boys, have you got anything else before we go to any other business?
Well, I think it's fair to point out, you know, Andreas Mikkelsen rolling on the last stage of... I know you said you're going to speak to WRC2 with Gus Greensmith, and I thought he was fantastic over the weekend, and feel free to pass that on to him when you speak to him. But, yeah, Andreas Mikkelsen rolled on the final stage, which is... someone else did that last year as well, didn't they? When Ocean Price won the Drive DMAC trophy as well. Portuguese driver. His name's escaped me briefly. But anyway, yeah, Mikkelsen crashing out on the last stage and giving the win to Pontus Tiedemann. So Pontus looking very strong in the championship there with the points.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I don't know how that managed to happen, but Rye, have you ever gone off on the last stage?
Have I ever gone off on the last stage? Yes, I have. I have. Not permanently off, actually. I don't think I've ever gone permanently off on the last stage, but I have gone off.
Jack, have you?
Nope.
Jack? No, okay. Just checking. It's always good to check. Couple of things I've got.
Have you, Tony? That's a yes.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not, by the way. No, I haven't. I've had a drive shaft go on the last stage, which is, can't even begin to tell you how I felt at that point, but no, I've never gone off on the last stage.
We've had an engine fail on the last stage, haven't we, Ryan?
We have, yes. Yeah, but thankfully close enough to the finish that it managed to cough and splutter over the line.
I've got, I feel like I'm cheating, boys, because I've got a couple of little bits and pieces I want to do, and I was going to put them into any other business, but we know any other business is meant to be 1 point and 1 point only. So,
you don't stick to that any week, so no. You may as well do it.
And I've got two anyway.
Okay, well, there you go now. One of them is Jack Bengen's, piece that he's wrote this week in MN.
God, you take it to pieces, aren't you?
UK rallying, right, needs a four-wheel drive one make series. Who'd have thought of that, eh? I wonder why that's never been done.
Bernardo Souza, sorry to blast that out, but that was the guy who rolled on the final stage of Rally Portugal last year.
You've just got Portuguese Rally Tourette's now, haven't you?
Sorry.
Bernardo Souza. Yeah, it's done. Okay, it's fine.
I'm done now.
Right, a one make four-wheel drive series.
With what car, Jack? What were you thinking?
Well, I suggested an Evo 9. I know that'd be difficult because Mitsubishi aren't really bothered about motorsport and don't really want to get involved. So, but that was the kind of crux of it. If you use an Evo 9, maybe that wouldn't work because you wouldn't get the backing from the manufacturer. But yeah.
Well, and therein lies the problem with cost-effective four-wheel drive rallying, doesn't it? We've been down this route before, and there isn't the Group N cars of the past, and it's difficult to do cost-effectively. Yeah.
There you go. We just took apart your piece there. So, folks, if you want to read Jack's piece, so to speak, you can read it. And
if that was you taking it apart, then you didn't do a very good job.
Well, I didn't need to. Fortunately, I've got a man who not, like myself, has done one week championships, but also competed in the last major four-wheel drive one-mate championship.
Absolutely.
So I felt Ryan Champion was probably far better than all of us to actually comment on it.
Well, my suggestion was that the cars no longer need to be homologated, because the point of doing this would be to progress into the sort of top level of the British Rally Championship. So
I like the idea of it, Jack, because I think Evo 9 is non-homologated. Yeah, B13, yeah. Oh, I just happen to have the right car. Yeah, good idea.
Just for the record, absolute rally listener, I've not designed this one-mate championship for Ryan Champion.
Oh, been there, done that. Don't need to do a championship again.
Yeah. A couple of other things. One thing I wanted to mention: horrendous accident over in Russia. Alexei Lukyanuk has been hospitalised. Jack, I unfortunately, and this is something which I have a bit of an issue with, I unfortunately seen photographs that I can't unsee of that accident. Very, very sad, unfortunately. Somebody lost a life in that particular accident. And there seems to be some questions now asked about testing and how testing happens and how other people are on roads and things like that. You guys have obviously wrote a piece about it this week.
Yeah, I looked after that. I mean, obviously covered Alexei winning Islas Canarias, lost last couple of months. So that was a bit of a hard hit to see that one had happened. But yeah, obviously, personally, wish Alexei all the best. But the Russian Federation are investigating what happened. So I think it'd be unfair to speculate how the crash happened and all that sort of stuff until that investigation is sort of concluded. But Alexei was driving the car, and the guy who was co-driving for him on that occasion was sort of employing him for a bit of tuition, ready for the next round of the Russian Championship. So yeah, very sad. They're both still in hospital as far as I know, and on Monday Alexei is due to have an operation. So, you know, hopefully that's all gone okay and we can give you a bit more of an update next week as to what's going on there.
Yeah, thoughts are with him. Boys, we've got to any other business. Jack Benyon, would you like to go first?
I can do. Would you like me to?
Yeah, well, that's why I offered you.
Brilliant. Okay, my only other business involves Russell Brooks. So apologies if you've read MMFD because you'll have seen the very short story that I've written. But Russell Brooks won a rally in 1979, and it was the Tulip Rally in Belgium. And because of budget cuts from various sponsors and stuff like that, he wasn't given his trophy. So the clerk of the course of this said event, which is still running, found out about this in San Marino recently and decided that it was only right for Russell to get his trophy. So 39 years after he won the event, he went over with the car that he used to win the event and received his trophy from the organisers, which I thought was not only a very nice thing for the organisers to do, but, you know, lovely for Russell to finally get that trophy after so long after winning the event. And Peter Bryan co-drove him on the event. So I just thought it was a really nice story, and it was one of those things that, you know, after a week where I've written a story about Alexei looking up being involved in a terrible crash, those kinds of stories kind of pick you up and remind you why you kind of do this job. So I thought that was a really nice story.
Yeah, nice piece. Brian Champion?
I have a couple of little things. First, the first one being, obviously, Sebastian Ogier. That was his fifth win in Portugal. So, I mean, incredibly successful in Portugal. I reckon Jack Benyon might get this, but there's one other driver has won the Rally of Portugal five times. Tony Simpson, hazard a guess.
Tommy Mäkinen.
Not Tommy Mäkinen. Jack Benyon.
Is it Marco Hulin?
It is Marco Hulin. Good answer.
Wow.
Yeah, well done. Dug that from nowhere. Yeah, Marco Hulin was also very, very successful in Portugal. Now, anybody who caught the Red Bull TV coverage of the rally will have seen a feature with Carlos Sainz that I thought was absolutely brilliant. Carlos was the co-presenter over the weekend, and they actually got Carlos Sainz and Luis Moya back together in an R5-208, and he did the FAF stage, and it was brilliant to see the two of them together. I mean, firstly, they were having really good banter. They clearly really enjoyed it. And actually, Carlos Sainz, for all he could be a man of few words when he was, he was interviewed during his career, I thought he did a great job presenting. So if you haven't caught that footage of Carlos Sainz and Luis Moya back together, that's really, really good to see. And just one other bit of footage is that the guys from Drive in the States, the online channel on YouTube, this week launched a video that covers David Higgins's tribute to Colin McRae from the 2015 Rally GB. Ryan Simoncheck that did the feature, he also got to ride in a Legacy with Jim McRae and impressed it with me. And it's a nice little video, and we'll put that out on the Absolute Rally Twitter feed.
There you go. I haven't really got any major any other business. I've just got a little piece which Jack, you've already wrote a nice little piece on as well, and funnily enough kind of coincides a little bit. We've just kind of took the mic a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's John Armstrong again, who's a driver which he's just got incredible pace, still a really, really young man. Obviously he's got two drives coming up in WRC2 with the following on from the DMAC Drive Trophy wins that he got last year. So he's got two events in an R5 car. They were hoping to hire an R5 car, Jack, and I know I'm kind of plagiarising your piece a little bit here, but he's plumbed to basically run an Evo 10 for some four-wheel drive experience. It's sensible, incredibly sensible, doing a lot of rallies in an Evo 10 as opposed to, you know, absolutely breaking the bank to just do one rally in an R5 car in order to get ready for his prize drives. I hope John finds a level driving the Evo 10 that he can transfer over to the R5 and do himself justice. So, Jack, there you go. So I'm sorry I've kind of semi-plagiarised your particular story, but I was going to mention it anyway.
It was worth pointing out that he was quicker than Martin McCormack, who finished on the podium of the Scottish Rally last weekend on one of the stages. So, and that was with a road car box in. So he's got some pace, the lad, and you know when he wants to push on, he can. So it'll be interesting to see if we, you know, how he gets on in Germany and Spain is the other round as well. He's doing so. Yeah.
So there you go, boys. We've got a whole piece on BRC coming up, obviously with David Bogie and Frederick Arlin. Folks, the story behind that is unbelievable. But Jack, you need to obviously big up the junior section. That's the section which you guys cover. Just give us a quick rundown of what happened in the junior section of BRC.
I thought you were going to end the podcast there, and I was thinking, how can I interrupt Tony without being rude, just to sort of point out a friend of the show.
We didn't talk about constant professional. You're, Jack Bengen.
You are fantastic, Tony. Anyway, the you know, friend of the show, Cameron Davis, won the MN Junior round at the Scottish last weekend, and I was considering doing that as man of a business until I've written the Russell Brooks stuff, but the, you know, the fact that, you know, he's done that on a shoestring is really impressive, I think, and a sign to some people out there that, you know, you can go and do R2 rallying on a budget. You know, it's not ideal to do it, and it's not, you know, it's not the best way to do things, but you know, it can be done. And he's had a difficult couple of rounds to start the season, but he was definitely on the pace on the Scottish, and really, as I wrote in the paper this week, it was a drive beyond his years. He competed with Oscar Solberg, and as soon as Oscar Solberg retired, he throttled back and managed his gap, brought the car home to the end, and I thought did a great job all weekend. So well done to Cameron. And William Crichton should have been on the podium, but had a puncture on last stage, which I think was his fourth or fifth puncture of the weekend or something along those lines. So yeah, Marian Evans finished second and Marty Gallagher third. So good competitive field again, and the third different winner in three different rounds, so proving that it's a competitive championship. Sure,
mega. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. So there you go, boys. Same time, same place next week for you, Jack Bengen.
Hopefully, yeah. I might be out of the country, but I'm sure we'll be able to sort something out.
It's all right. Wales has good phone reception. Ryan Champion.
That's good, because if Jack Bengen does go out of the country to where I think he might be going, I don't want to talk to him anyway.
Okay, there you go, folks. We're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to come back with. It's a bit of a first. We've not done it before, and I'll probably make reference to it far too many times. In a piece, but we've got David Bogie and Frederick Arlin, who went into the last stage of the Scottish Rally, not even a second splitting them, and David got the win due to Frederick having a mechanical, but they're really, really good teammates. It was good fun to have them both on, and Jack Bengen was an unbelievable interviewer, by the way. So we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally. The Supercar and Rally Show blasts into Bangorondi Racecourse on Sunday the 18th of June. On-track action, displays and fun for all the family this Father's Day weekend. Tickets on sale through www.tsars.org. The Supercar and Rally Show, Bangorondi Racecourse, Sunday the 18th of June. We'll see you there. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to part four of Absolute Rally. I hope you've enjoyed it so far. This introduction will probably take longer to actually say than what was splitting these two guys going into the final stage of the last round of the MSA Penistone British Rally Championship, because the Scottish last weekend. Our man on the ground up there was Jack Bengen, and Jack is going to talk now to Frederick Arlin and David Bogie. So, Jack, take over, my friend. The floor is yours.
It's a difficult to choose where to start, but I'm going to start with Frederick Arlin and your weekend. So you started with two victories in the British Rally Championship this year, Frederick, but just run us through your event and how it sort of went for you, for the listeners who weren't paying so much attention to the Scottish Rally last weekend.
No, I must say we had a perfect weekend, 98% of it anyway. We followed the plan, which we decided in the beginning of the rally to try and be in front of Ocean Prize, which was the guy closest to me in the championship. And as the rally went on, it developed into a really nice and fun fight with David over the victory. Just tried to be very, very smart. We know how rough the Scottish rally is and how easy it is to get those punctures. So we did a clean, good rally. Would say put a wheel wrong, to be honest. Didn't have any moments, just drove very neat and tidy and quick, of course. And very enjoyable fight with David up until the last 6 kilometers.
T- tell us what happened. It was it was a bit out of your hands, wasn't it, the last days? Not much you could do about what happened.
No, we've actually analyzed it now. Martin Wilkinson, my engineer, has looked into the data, so we are pretty sure, and we know pretty sure where the stone probably came in at which point. And you can see in the middle of the road on a like a straight into a right-hand corner, there is something pointing up, and somehow that stone must have gotten through into the radiator. And really happy that the MSA actually put up the in-car video for everyone to see that we were in the middle of the road. There were no offs as first reported. So yeah, it's what it is.
So what does that mean for your championship now? Because you had a fairly large lead going into the event, and that's sort of eaten into it a little bit now, isn't it? So how do you play that for the rest of the year now, looking at that?
No, I mean, it seems like the way we're doing things is enough to win rallies and be at the top. So we're just going to continue in exactly the same way as we've been doing the last couple of months. And no stress. All good.
I think it's always a cliche to say that drivers have bad luck, but I think it's fair to say that you had a fair amount of bad luck on that last stage, Frederick. And someone who knows a lot about bad luck would be David Bogie. So I'll introduce you now at this point, David. Thanks for coming on to Absolute Rally and being here with us today.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me on.
It's a bit of a boost for your championship, this event, isn't it? Looking at you know, it's obviously gone bad for Frederick and he's your teammate, and that's sad to see. But also you've got to take something out of this for yourself, and that's the fact that you're back in the championship chase in a way, aren't you, with being back in the top three now?
Yeah, definitely. I think this point in the season really was make or break for me. A poor result in the Scottish Rally and that would be my championship well and truly over. So it's good to get the win. Of course, it was disappointing to see Frederick get trouble in the last stage, but it has opened up the championship a wee bit more. Frederick obviously got off to a very good start this year, and I think maybe in the interest of everyone, it's made it that wee bit closer. And, it's given us an outside chance again.
I think I've been quite lucky in the sense that, I've managed to cover most of your rallies over the last year and a half now, so I've got a fairly good insight as to how your rallies have been going. But for our Absolute Rally listeners who are maybe just looking at the results and not maybe seeing so much on the ground, just talk us through a little bit through your last half, because you've had some really positive stage times and some really strong performances over certain events, haven't you? But the results just haven't quite been there for you, have they?
The pace has been good. Obviously we came back last year. It was my first year back since 2011 in the British Championship. So to come back and to get back up to pace again was quite difficult. But I think our pace throughout the year improved, and I think really Rally GB, last year was where it all came together. The result wasn't there, but the times were very good. So, going into this year, we're very confident. We had a couple of national wins, which was good. We felt comfortable in the car and everything was good. But, the first two rounds of the year has been quite difficult. Things just haven't quite clicked, and given me a result. But, there's a lot of positives to take away. And, I'm a firm believer in you make your own luck. And, of course, in rallying, you're going to hit trouble along the way. But, on the whole, I would say, there's a lot of positives to take away. And, the win from last weekend is certainly a massive positive. And, it sets us up nicely for the rest of the year.
Absolutely. Is there anything specific you'd say you'd worked on over that period of time to sort of bring this together? Or has it just been a case of, trying to patch together a whole weekend of a mixture of the pace and the good luck?
I think it's been certainly that. The pace has been good in places, but it's just about bringing it all together and making for a good result in the end. And I think last year I pushed for wins when maybe I should have sat back and consolidated for a podium result and hit trouble along the way. So it's been quite difficult. I think a couple of things, obviously the first round was quite difficult given the conditions and the Pirelli obviously with the brake pipe failure. So it is a case of what could have been, but I think on the whole it's still positive, and I think the rest of the year is looking good, and providing we can keep out of trouble and keep the pace where it is, then but it's by no means over.
Fantastic. Frederick, going into that last loop of stages on the Scottish there, it must have been quite difficult for you in terms of judging how hard to push and what to do with the championship sort of not really on the line, but the battle there and you trying to score points for that championship, but also seeing your teammate sort of pushing you quite hard and going for the victory. So how hard was it to balance those two things in terms of maybe being conservative or going for the victory?
I mean, first of all, I just would like to to say that, which maybe hasn't really come through, that for me, everyone is speaking about that I lost the win. In my opinion, I lost the second place. You know, that win was never ours to grab. David was leading into the last stage. So that's, you know, quite important for me to tell everyone that we lost the second place and not the win. Second of all, what you just said, I mean, it was not hard at all, to be honest. I think both for me and David, we really enjoyed the fight, and I would have been happy if he won, and he would have been happy if I won. So I think the respect between us is quite unusual between teammates. We really, like, before every stage, we just went to each other and said, hey, good luck. So the fight wasn't hard. It was just a lot of fun. I think I've never enjoyed a fight as much before in my whole career. And for sure, I was thinking about the championship, and but the four last stages, we did everything we could to try and take that win. And on the last stage, I had actually two wide corners, 2 or 3 Ks into the stage, where I just said to Torsten that I'm not going to be able to take this win already there. I knew that David was on a real flyer, and with those two wide moments, I just said to Torsten that, okay, let's calm down, get that second place. And actually, it was just a very enjoyable weekend, all in all.
David, was it an easier situation for you in the sense that you had one target, and that was to go and win the event? You're not maybe thinking so much as Frederick as leading the championship. You were out there to win that event, weren't you? And would you say that was a little bit easier for you maybe in terms of your mindset?
I think it was easier for me because there was only real one option, and that was to go out there and win. But I must say, I take my hat off to Frederick. I know, you know, it was difficult for him with a championship there as well, you know. But I do think taking the fight when he could have really sat back and consolidated and just let it go, you know, I think that's I've got to take my hat off to him as a driver, you know. At the end of the day, we all want to go out there and do well. And I think, as Frederick touched on, you know, it's just such an enjoyable day coming out each stage. And I was just, I think I took the lead and Frederick took it back and then I took it again. And, you know, it was just so, so close. So, yeah, for me, you know, I had nothing to lose. You know, when Frederick's saying that the two corners there, he went wide on, I went wide in both corners and followed his lines. So it was, you know, we were both pushing hard. And, you know, of course, when I came across him in the stage, it was disappointing to see. But that let me back off and kind of cruise to victory.
David, you've been around the British Rally Championship for forever, it feels like. You've kind of come through a few generations of it. I know you were missing for a couple of years, obviously when the rules changed and stuff like that. Where are these fights for you? And I know Frederick's there as well, but where are these fights with you that you've had previously? Do you feel that, you know, especially with people like Frederick coming over now, the BRC has gone up that level again? Because, you know, you had your fights in, you know, back in the Evo days and stuff like that, but does this feel a little bit more intense now, would you say?
It definitely does. You know, for me, it's like competing in WRC2. You know, you've seen Frederick's capabilities and where he can go anywhere else in the world and have success. So, you know, the pace is so hot. You know, we've seen Brynalton across there for the Prelly, and okay, he had his problems, but I think on the whole, he was still quite amazed at how strong the pace is in BRC. So, you know, we want to put ourselves against it. You know, we do want to go up against the best. So when you get involved in a fight like that at the high level, you know, that's where I get my satisfaction from. You know, me and Kevin just absolutely love that when we're just in the thick of a battle. And, you know, that's what makes it all worthwhile for us.
Good man. Frederick, last one for your good self. Does your attitude change now for the rest of the season? Have you had to adjust your plan for the season? Obviously, Davis just been saying he obviously had to go and push on the Scottish. Do you now change your mentality for Ypres or for the rest of the season?
No, definitely not. I mean, it's going to be the same plan. I mean, both in border counties, Pirelli, and also now the Scottish, we showed one thing, and that was consistency. We are always, I've never been slower than, I think, than a, except from the Pirelli rally, than a third place on a stage in both Scottish now and also in border counties. So this is going to play into our hands on the longer events like Ypres with 22, I think, stages. If we can continue exactly the same way, it will just help us the longer the rallies get, because we show we can do a rally without any mistakes, and I'm just going to continue like this. I'm pretty confident in my pace and my ability, so feeling happy.
Good man. Well, this has been a first. We've actually had two teammates
who've battled tooth and nail on the programme at exactly the same time. So in view of the fact this is something a little bit special for our programme, which is, you know, a couple of years old now, I'm going to open this up a little bit. Frederick, do you have one question for your teammate David Bogie that is broadcastable on our podcast?
Of course, I have a lot of questions, but some of them are not really meant to be on the
podcast. Exactly, that's exactly so. And David, you can prepare for this because it's going to be the same for you in a second. Frederick Arling, what would you like to ask your teammate David Bogie?
Give me 1 second. I would like to ask David, what is the goal of his rallying?
The goal of my rallying is probably to beat Frederick Allen. It's proven very, very difficult. Hey, my goal is to enjoy it. You know, I've never enjoyed my rallying so much in so long. You know, to be part of CA1 Sport, to be driving alongside Frederick, and I think he said it's quite unusual for two teammates to be battling for a rally but enjoying things so much. You know, I share my car setup with Frederick and vice versa. All our tyre choices are all shared. You know, we just want to go out there and compete head to head. So, you know, I just enjoy being part of a team. And, you know, that is my goal, to carry on enjoying that at this level.
Good man. Now, you have the privilege of asking a question to your teammate, David Bogie, Frederick Arling.
I have a girlfriend, so this might upset her, but could I have your sister's phone number, Frederick?
David, look in your WhatsApp message.
You're a good man,
Frederick. Does that mean you're going to send it by WhatsApp, or does that mean you're going to give David some stick via WhatsApp?
No. It's already sent him. Number, everything is there.
Wow. who
didn't want to have David Bogie as your sister's husband? Funniest guy.
Can I have it as well, Frederick?
Well, Jack.
Steady on, boys. This isn't that program with Paddy McGuinness on a Saturday night. This isn't that type of show. But listen,
Frederick won't know what that show is, Tony.
I know. It's called, what's it called? I can't even think what it's called now.
Take me out.
Of course it is. Yeah. It's a program called Take Me Out, Frederick. You're missing nothing. Don't worry. But we're going that. We don't want to basically offer your sister out to all and sundry. I think we need to just make sure we're clear on that. I'm sure your sister's very nice.
My sister is very nice, but honestly, if there's someone I would like to, because David is actually one of the best mates, so, yeah. Sorry, Joanna, but it's what it is.
There you go. Listen, boys, thank you for doing something quite unique. As I said, we've not done this before. I didn't know quite how it was going to work, and I think I couldn't have picked two better people to do it. So, Frederick Arling, thank you once again for joining us on Absolute Rally.
Thank you very much, as always.
Good
man. Pleasure.
Good man. And David Bogie, don't be a stranger. We did speak about having you on when I seen you at Autosport with Martin, so it's nice to finally get you on. But please come back again and talk to us soon.
Yeah, will do. Thanks very much.
Good man. Folks, we're going to go to a break, and then we're going to come back with the next section.
This is Absolute Rally. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports. From Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And as I mentioned on Twitter, if you do follow us on Twitter, good on you. Absolute_rally, of course, on Twitter. Somebody tweeted in, we must talk to Gus Greensmith. And I said, of course we're going to talk to Gus Greensmith, because he's our man in WRC too. So welcome back again this year, Gus, to Absolute Rally.
Thank you very much. Good to be back as usual.
Well, do you know what, mate? We said you were going to be our man in WRC too. And we've kept an eye on things and everything else. We wanted to get you back. I'm conflicted on where to go with the beginning of this, because I've got to go hand on heart and say I was really, really surprised by your pace very, very early doors on Portugal. Did it surprise you? I know it's your favourite event. I know this year is a learning year, but were you surprised with the times?
Well, I was slightly surprised, but then again, not that surprised, because I don't think I've ever focused on something so much in my life since Sweden, kind of getting the understanding of what I needed to do. And obviously working with Craig, working with M-Sport, everything was made a lot clearer and a lot easier for me to kind of nail down and nail down the actual bits that were important for me to improve on. So since then, it's just been flat out. It's not, there's been no lift on the throttle, just practicing and just trying new things and working together. And we got about half, probably around in March to April time, we kind of then pinpointed everything. We were like, that's what it needs to be, and that's how it's gone. So we went to Portugal, and everything just seemed to click quite well. Like, we've still got a bloody long way to go, and there's still a lot of things that I need to improve on. But the jump in speed I've made for Portugal was pretty massive compared to Sweden.
I've got to ask, what bits do you think have significantly changed from Sweden up to Portugal for you?
Probably the biggest thing is I found a place where my notes are good now, and I don't really need to change them much more from now on. They're pretty much exactly what I've been trying to find for the past couple of years. It's just taken me a few trial and errors to get to that point, and now I feel I'm at that point where there's no hesitation when I deliver a note on the recce, and so when I hear it on the rally, I'm committed to it 100% every time. So that was a huge thing, and that was obviously a big help from Craig. And because of the confidence I've got in my notes now, the driving's just smoothed up, and I'm making a lot less mistakes. So that was a big part of it. And also just having a little bit more time in the car, because compared to the other drivers, I've had very little time in the car this year. Eric's been doing all the rallies, Timo's been doing a few more, but Pontus is out pretty much every rally. Andreas is Andreas, so I only had one day testing before Portugal, so yeah, that helped a little bit. And I feel every time I get back in the car, I'm a much better driver than I was the last time I got out of it.
With regards to the R5 car, obviously we've just been talking before we started this, your debut was on the Rally GB in it last year. How are you feeling now with regards to an R5? Is an R5 car, I'd be absolutely giddy with the concept of even sitting in one. Hand on heart, and I've been privileged to sit in a lot of cars, but I'd be genuinely giddy. I guess for you guys, it's important almost to put that giddiness to one side. Can you do that? Can you allow yourself to kind of focus on it, or do you still kind of get that little bit of, oh, I'm getting in an R5 car here to do a world championship event?
No, every time before I go to a rally, I'm giddy to get back in the car. The R5 is a fantastic car, and the Fiesta Evo 2 is even better than the last one. So every time I think that I'm getting into an R5, I just can't believe how lucky I am and how much I kind of understand now that the hard work's beginning to pay off and the opportunities I've been given from M-Sport and everything else. So it's been a massive thing for me. So to be able to jump in a car and do this is kind of what I'm doing at home as well. It's just unbelievable. So yeah, every time I kind of get within about a week of a rally, I am the most intolerable person or untolerable person in the world. My family do not want to be anywhere near me, because I'll be walking around the house doing gear changes. We'll be completely zoning out in conversations because I'll be thinking of stages. So yeah, when I get within a week of a rally, yeah, it's just can't wait to get back in the car.
I love it. I'm so glad you answered that way. I can't even begin to. The child in me is so glad that you answered that way. So I've just picking up on what you've just said there. So you have got the Evo 2 car now, have you?
Yes, yeah. In Portugal, we I think it was me, Pierre, Timo and Eric had the Evo 2 car, which was a good step forward in the car, especially. It would help in a place like Portugal, a little bit more torque in the mid-range of the car, so that helped a little bit. It just made it a little bit more drivable, which was just made it a little bit easier to drive, so... Yeah, it was a good step forward, and it sounds better now. It sounds a lot better, which is always good when you're in the car.
I guess, well, it always does, doesn't it? But I guess for the uninitiated, so the step up from the original incarnation of the R5 to the Evo 2, is it more engine mods for that torque, or is there other stuff that you can notice as you're driving it?
It's more the torque, the fact that the car is just easy to drive. You're changing less gears. It's just little bits that at the end of a rally make a decent difference. So I think it will be available pretty soon. So I'm sure it will be snatched up by quite a lot of drivers.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. I'm sure it will be. But not me, Gus. I hasten to add, unfortunately.
You're very welcome to join me. in the passenger seat.
Mate, listen, don't, because I'll be camped outside your house for the next 6 months. Go, Gus, when are we going? When are we going, Gus? Gus, when are we going? Do you know the way you've just been saying you're in Torrible for a week leading up to an event?
Yeah.
I could be in Torrible for 6 months, Gus. I can promise you that. I can promise you that.
I think my big dogs will be of use then, if you're camping outside my house.
Yeah, Scouser turns up over the other side.
Go,
yeah. Release the hounds. Right, we've talked about the times. Obviously, rather frustratingly for you, there were some issues with regards to transmission, so you couldn't really show your pace throughout the entire event. Just tell us a little bit what happened with the transmission, Gus.
It started pretty well. The first two stages, I think, was fourth and fifth fastest, and we were kind of in a battle with Pontus, Eric, and Timu for second. And then into the third stage, we had this almighty vibration, which eventually turned into more of a bang. And it was the prop shaft had been pierced by a rock, we think. And it snapped. So we had to kind of have a look at the stage and decided, no, we need to get to the end of the stage, no matter what, and take it off to make sure that we can get the experience for the rest of the day. Because at the end of the day, that's why I'm here at a rally. So we got back to service, made the repairs the afternoon. We got a puncture, but apart from that, it was okay. We just had to be careful in the afternoon loop, not push too hard because we didn't have any spares left. So it was just a calm afternoon, no particular push. And then the second day, the first stage started quite well. I had my first ever fastest split, faster than everyone else. That was quite good. It was a little, maybe not committed as I should have been, which is where I lost my time, but I understood that after the first pass. And then going into the second stage, for me, I think me, Timu, and Pontus and Andreas were all separated by about 2.5 seconds at the around 11, 12K point. And then my power steering went, which was not ideal, but we got through the long stage. A few blisters aside, it was fine. And then the afternoon again, we went again. All went fine. Times were quite good until I snapped my anti-roll bar halfway through the long stage. So we lost quite a lot of time there, but apart from that, it was quite good. And then the last day was really slippy, not quite what I expected. And I adapted my driving to that, so that was fine. And then last stage just cruised home, and yeah, it was a good rally. Got all the experience I needed, so it'll be useful for the future.
Good man. So you got to the end of the set. You manhandled the prop off. Now this is something which I think is really, really good. Two questions here. One, I'm assuming there is a lot of time spent at M Sport learning about the car and going through having coaching days and stuff like that to learn how to do emergency repairs, I'm guessing.
I spent a few days up there before, pretty much straight after Sweden, just learning to take off the bits that realistically I'm going to have to change in a rally at some point, whether it be a strut, anti-roll bar. I didn't practice prop shaft, funnily enough.
Okay.
So that was more Craig's job at the weekend. I kind of just sat there by the car with the phone trying to give the information. So I was pretty much useless on that one. So that's something I'll be practicing in the future. But yeah, we've spent a few days learning how to take off struts and stuff like that, just to make sure that if it happens in the rally, I can do it and quickly.
Now, the other thing there, obviously, Craig's been around a good few years. We know that. Craig also obviously sat in an R5 Fiesta last year, obviously, with Elvin as well. Does it help having somebody, you know, because I'm assuming Craig's not daft. He's been around, the job for a long time. Does it help having somebody who knows the car as well?
Yeah, it does. He does know the car well, and it is a big help for me, because at the end of the day, I'm still only 20. I've still got a lot to learn, and I'm trying to learn as quickly as possible. So to have someone with his experience in the car sat next to me is incredibly important, I think. He uses his initiative bloody well. I'll give him that one. He's fast on his feet thinking, which is always very handy. Because we're both impatient when it's going wrong. We want things done properly and quickly to make sure we get through the day. And it works really well in situations like that for me and him, having the same kind of mentality and approach to a problem. So for me, it's brilliant. When we first started talking about this year, he said to me he was a cool, calm Welsh dude, and he's not lied. I can tell you that. He's definitely not lied.
Yeah. He's very, very laid back. Now, you've just been talking about analysing splits and things like that. Now, I know, obviously, I assume you're still working with Christian as well. Christian's still involved to some degree, helping you out. Do you look at, your splits and times and stuff, do you look at them in service? Do you look at the end of the, you know, day one, day two, day three, or do you not allow yourself to do that until after the event?
No, I'm quite on it with the splits after a stage. Probably too on it, because I usually get in trouble for being on my phone. But that's the only thing I'm on my phone for, just to look at the splits and understand where I've lost the time. Because usually I have to come out of the stage, I have a good understanding of what was good, what was bad. And if there was a point where I didn't understand why I was losing the time, then Christian would have my own boards and he would give the feedback to me once he'd watched them as I was on my way to the next stage. So we have ways of dealing with when the times are not quite good enough. But usually I'm quite good at understanding why I've lost the time.
Good man. Well, listen, Gus. What happens now? Is Sardinia is not an event for you? It's not on your calendar, is it?
No Sardinia for me. Unfortunately, but it's Poland next for me, so it's a lot of onboards, a lot of practice with Craig. Probably go and visit Christian. I'm sure he'll want to put me in some sauna somewhere and do some training with me, because that's what Finnish people do. But apart from that, it will be it'll just be repetitive practice. And obviously, I hope to get a few days up at M Sport and just keep refreshing my skills on the car.
Good man. We're going to catch up after Poland, aren't we?
Yeah, sounds like a good plan.
Good man. Gus Greensmith, thanks so much for joining us this week on Absolute Rally. Folks, thank you also for the download. And if you can get involved, remember you can still get involved via Patreon. We're going to have some giveaways on the people who've signed up for that as well. Clock onto the website. You can go onto that, which is absoluterally.co.uk. You can listen to old episodes and everything else. And you can get in contact with us via Facebook, which is facebook.com/Absolute Rally. Folks, thanks for the download. We'll be back same time, same place in your podcast hole this time next week.